Weekends on the Fanatic. T. Lynam and Joe Torty. Sports talk never stops. Listen all weekend to 97.5 The Fanatic. Philadelphia.
Happy Saturday to you, Philadelphia, along with D-Line and Joe Torty. Glad that you could join us here from our spacious, luxurious Ballykinwood Studios. Dylan McKinnon is producing the program. And D, there's so much hoop that I don't even know where to exactly start, because it seems like, well, it doesn't seem like. It's been 2 weeks since you and I have convened, but even in
I was here,
week,
Joe. I was here.
Well, I know,
me
yes.
and the people talked all about it last week.
Well, I assume... Yes, I was isolated for everything else. I assume that everything went swimmingly and beautifully, just like the Sixers series against the Wizards outside of the Joel Embiid injury. So I guess let's start there with game one tomorrow against the Hawks. And there are rumblings that the Sixers, if Embiid is not able to play, you might see a lineup that has Ben Simmons replacing Joel Embiid at the five.
Well, that's what game five was. That's what I predicted. Thibel would be in the lineup, and that's what it should be.
I thought it looked good. I thought that it looked as good as it could possibly look against the Wizards.
That will be the lineup if he's not able to go.
Were you a fan of what you saw in game five? With that lineup, and then, you know, kind of projecting it into game one, do you think that
I was a fan of how everybody elevated their game? I was a fan that I think when game four, when he went down, they looked like they did not know how to respond, and being prepared to not have him on the floor looked a whole lot better in game five. And I think obviously the shooting of Seth, the play of Tobias, if people don't think Tobias is your number two in terms of being your scorer, he is. And then obviously Ben being able to deliver the triple-double, and he made 5 of 8 free throws. So the game being not on the line in the second half, I thought benefited Ben, because if he had to go to the line with the game on the line, we may have seen something different. But it quieted people for a given day.
And I'm sorry if you did cover this this ground and this territory already, D, but I haven't done it myself. I've known several people that have had meniscus tears in their knees, both athletic people and non-athletic people.
I have one.
You have one right now?
Right.
Okay. So there are some people that don't play basketball every single day.
I don't.
That just go through their lives normally, right, with a torn meniscus.
And it does vary person to person. So obviously the size of Joel and the weight bearing part of Joel and playing the basketball is significant. And the other thing is, like, when they talk treatment, obviously I have no idea what the swelling. That's the first and foremost. You got to get the swelling out of there. Second, he's never been a fan of wearing a knee brace, even in other situations when he's been bothered by some kind of knee injury. And the knee brace actually prevents, there was a great article, it was on NBC Sports Philly, but would prevent his other parts of his leg of being able to build up the strength to take the onus off of the meniscus. So I would venture to say you will not see a knee brace on him if he has his say in it. And the article certainly made sense for that to be the case. If he's trying to build this stuff up around it to be able to play.
The basketball people and the couple football people that I've talked to who have had this injury have said that they were surprised to see the prognosis from the Sixers being more or less a day-to-day thing. He said, yeah, both people that I talked to in both of those sports said, you're looking at least for me, at least 2 to 4 weeks before you're getting on board with things. Now, I talked to a running back, and I talked to a point guard. So it might not be the same exact requirements as being for a center.
Yeah, right. I do think it changes person to person. And if I'm not mistaken, the lateral part of it is not what he's dealing with.
Okay.
So, obviously, they're
it's
not gonna,
not what he's dealing with. The lateral one
meaning
is...
Well, first of all, Doc was on. Listen to Doc. He doesn't say a whole lot, but he was on with Kincaid the other day. And this is the only time we've heard anything since the actual injury from Doc Rivers on Joel.
You don't know because we didn't have any old x-rays because he had hurt this knee. So it would be guess if we try. I would say most of the doctors probably think it's new.
Okay.
All right. So that's that was part of it, that it's not an old injury.
Right.
It's a new injury. To me, usually your pain comes from swelling.
Okay.
So you're trying to get the swelling down. I will say this. As a group, you've worked pretty darn hard to have home court advantage. If he's capable of playing game one, whatever that looks like, I'm running him out there because I'm not giving up home court right out of the gate to a team that just won two games at Madison Square Garden. And I don't care what you want to say about that Knicks team. To win two games, including the one that eliminates them at Madison Square Garden, is no big, you know, no easy feat.
Right.
And I'm not starting a seven-game series if he's, you know, if you tell me he's 75%, then I'm playing him.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, too, is that regardless of what the minutes look like, he's got to give you something if he can go at all.
If he can. And, I mean, we've all learned Doc is not a minute restriction guy. That's not to say he does a great job of, and this last series allowed him on numerous occasions in the five games to keep his starters at 30 minutes or less. All of them. Because that's what you were up against with Washington. So he's not a minute restriction guy, but he will smartly play his guys. But he goes in saying, if you put the uniform on, you're good to go. That's how he does things.
And we saw against Washington kind of what he said before the season in that same thing. It's like you're an earn your rest kind of deal. Like if you blow him out during the game, then you get to sit for the rest
Correct.
Of the game.
And that happened on many occasions. So his guys are well rested. The level of the competition increases, as it should when you advance to the next round. Atlanta is a better team than Washington. Washington had two All-Stars, and they tried to put their team on their back in Beal and Westbrook. Not possible for a seven-game series. Atlanta is more diverse than that, and they have more people that you're going to have to guard. And by the way, Nate McMillan has them playing really good defense. They held New York under 40% shooting for that five-game series and 97 points on average for the five games. So if you think you're just going to be able to waltz in and score against these guys, that is not the case.
610-632-0975. D, those are two teams that are still in. Let's talk about some teams that are out. Danny Ainge and the Celtics, this whole thing was super interesting to me when it broke a couple days ago because there were rumblings that they weren't happy with Brad Stevens. At least Celtics fans were not happy with Brad Stevens as a coach. And they were saying, oh, maybe this guy needs to be replaced. Well, he will end up being replaced as
He'll
a
find
head coach.
His replacement.
But, yeah, now he's in charge of looking for it. And Danny Ainge is out as the king of basketball.
Oh, won't see him no more.
In Boston.
By his own doing.
Yes.
Yes, he retired.
Well, so I don't know if that's true or not. I know that he stepped down from his position. And then there are some other teams that are supposedly interested in courting Danny Ainge now to come on and take on a role with their organization. The thing that I'm asking now is they'd better be sure that he's retiring because he's involved with the transition process and installing new people and Brad Stevens and things like that. I would think that if there was a prayer that he was going to go to some other team as the president of basketball operations, I don't know how much I'd want him involved in the transition process in Boston. You know what I mean? Like that's, he still has a lot of knowledge of the inner workings of how things are going to go.
It's not totally unlike what Daryl Morey did when he left Houston.
Right.
So
yeah, exactly.
I mean, there was an obvious handing of the baton there, and there's a handing of the baton from Danny. And then Daryl had a job shortly thereafter. So people like Danny Ainge, Daryl Morey, you know, they're hot commodities. If in fact, he is not stepping down because he wants to, you know, play golf and see his family.
Right, which is what he said.
Yeah, that's what he said. People change quickly when somebody comes courting you with some significant money and maybe a team that, like for Daryl Morey, this was an ideal situation. I can fix this. And, yeah, we'll see if he can. He now has a different hurdle to jump with Joel's health. But it certainly looked like something promising to somebody of his ilk that he, you know, in Houston, he had a lot of obstacles, you know.
Sure.
Whether he created some of them or, you know, he was always trying to change that roster to build around a James Harden. And he never was able to quite get it right. And so this will look like an ideal situation to come to a place that had two cornerstone players that were all-stars. And all he had to do was go find shooters to put around them and the right coach. So if Danny sees something out there and, you know, whether, let's see, what do we have now? Portland's a position.
I can't believe that's the first one that you said, because Kevin O'Connor linked Danny Ainge to Portland.
Well, yeah, for good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's got the ties there.
And, you know, whether you want to uplift and go to the other coast, it becomes, you know, that's a major deal. I don't know what his family situation is, how old his kids or grandkids and all that. But, you know, that's a pretty good. I love Terry Stotts. You know, obviously he's out. And a big reason is he's got the longest tenured team in consecutive years in the playoffs of 8 years. But, you know, it's a fourth time he's exited in the first round. And I think it speaks to the competitiveness of, we always talk about, really the Western Conference for a while now has been the stronger of the two. I think the East is coming up and getting better. But if you don't think the West is the better of the two conferences, then you're just not watching basketball. And the Lakers find themselves out. You know, Frank Vogel's got to retool with Pelinka. And I'm not surprised that the Lakers are out, because I thought it's one thing to get rest to get ready. It's another when your top two guys were basically out for at least 6 weeks.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, you have a lot of money invested in four guys, and you have filled the rest of it in. And I think you fill it in nicely with guys who want to play with a LeBron and an AD and have a chance of winning a championship. But at the end of the day, 6 weeks was too long. And neither guy, to me, looked healthy when they got to the playoffs anyhow. And
agreed.
Then AD got hurt on top of it.
Yeah, trying to play with the groin injury and everything else. But so let's talk about that really quickly, Dee, because obviously that was the firestorm of the last couple of days. Is what's LeBron's legacy now? And he got knocked out in the first round of the playoffs.
First time ever.
And he's talking about Space Jam instead of playing for the Olympics and like all of this other stuff, right? Some of it is, in my opinion, completely overblown, reactionary nonsense. And some of it probably does have some merit. Only because, Dee, and I don't know about how you felt, but he started talking about Jordan's legacy last year when the Lakers won the championship. There are people that are saying, can we really not talk about Jordan's legacy right now with LeBron getting out? I think it's appropriate to talk about where LeBron ranks next to Jordan if he's going to talk about where he ranks after winning championships versus being knocked out in the first round when you're 36 years old. Like, I think that it's totally, you invite those comparisons when that sort of thing happens.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, he did not speak in the exit interviews yesterday. So that, to me, speaks volumes also. Not a fan of that. Going away, ghosting when times are tough is just, it's wrong.
Yeah.
On so many levels. So if you want to tell me why somewhere down the line, fine. But and in terms of legacies, you know, now this is part of the resume. You had to play a play-in game and you got bounced in the first round. That's part, just like you went to 10 consecutive finals.
Yep.
That's part of your legacy. Okay. but you don't get to choose what is talked about and what's not talked about.
Right.
Everything that is on the resume is fair game. So I'm not going to knock the guy because he got bounced for the first time. It happens.
And for the reasons that you said, right? Nobody's healthy. You missed your stars 6 weeks apiece. Yeah.
However, the other guy never, first of all, he got to the finals when he got to the finals and never lost.
Right. That's so, part of it.
That's part of his. Now that's six, right?
Yeah.
And he had a little gap there.
Yes. Who knows what would have happened in the interim there.
But we can't.
Once again, we can speculate. Your resume is your
exactly.
resume.
Exactly. Mike, you weren't there, so you don't get to say we would have.
Right.
You just take the resume for what it is. And right now, the one guy, for all the times he got there, always won. And now, you know, not you did get two more finals. You did not win them all. And you had a first round exit.
Yeah. Well, and here's my problem, D, is that, like, I don't know, outside of catching Jordan, I don't know how much more work LeBron has to do in his career. You know what I mean? In terms of shaping up his legacy, his at the top of every statistical category and everything else, right? Like, unquestionably, especially if you have non-centers, like, unquestionably on the Mount Rushmore of non-centers who've ever played, right? Like, I think that there's a lot of people that would put him on that list. Now, you look at it
Rushmore
now.
Rushmore's tough. Four is tough.
It's a tough list to crack, right? But my thing is, people got into an uproar about, you know, are you playing in the Olympics? And he said, no, I'm going to be playing for the Toon Squad this summer, right? Talking about Space Jam. If you've been thinking that LeBron James, up until that statement, has been 150% about basketball and not about some other interests and other things that he's been doing, whether it's activism or business or whatever, then you haven't been paying attention. Like, I don't know why that was, like, the huge thing.
Well, the other
that
thing,
set everybody off.
I remember when, now my ears are going to get away from me, but I think it was Kobe's last Olympics. And I remember going, they had a game they played in the Washington, D.C. area. Before, and it might have been
like a prelim, like a run up to the Olympics,
where people could go, fans could go,
okay.
And now they're going to leave and go to the Olympics, and I go down there to cover it.
Gotcha.
And in all my years prior to anything I did covering Kobe, the swarm of reporters around the guy was always huge. Here's Kobe taking off his sneakers after the game, sitting, and everybody was like kind of courtside.
Mm-hmm.
There he is sitting by himself, and I go over, and he's like, "D, I'm an old man now," and he felt old in the moment, also.
Got it.
And so, I understand if LeBron doesn't want to play in the Olympics, it is totally understandable.
Absolutely.
And anybody who, you know, thought that they're 36 is, your body feels it.
Yeah, especially with the minutes that he's played.
And he's represented the country plenty. He's been there, done that. He does not have to do that again.
Right.
There's plenty of people that can be playing for the USA. So that part was not surprising. The answer is what becomes, like, do you really have to do the Space Jam thing?
Right. Exactly. But he's been about Space Jam for years.
Yes. I will also say there's been a number of things. You know, he did not sound happy when his team had to do the play-in.
Right.
He was a big non-fan of the play-in game because he becomes a guy who has to play in it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it was never a problem before.
Right. And so I think there's a part of him that, you know, he can come across like a little spoiled brat.
I totally get it.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm saying is that, like, honestly, Space Jam is the perfect metaphor for what, like, the last 4 years of LeBron James has been. Like, yeah, there's some basketball in it, like, but it's also about a lot of other things. And I don't know if I would necessarily call Space Jam a basketball movie necessarily.
Well, I would say that his goal when he went to Los Angeles was definitely to get a championship.
Check.
He did it. So I don't even know how interested he is to, like, run it back. Like Palenka and Vogel are saying, they feel kind of strong, but they have eight guys to make decisions on.
Yeah.
Eight. And if you're you start to say no to even two of them, or they say no to you.
The whole thing kind of changes.
Well, you just have to, you have a lot of work to do there. You have four guys that equal $100 million in LeBron, AD, Kuzma, and Caldwell Pope.
And it's not like you're making decisions to tweak a team that was in the conference finals. Like, that group brought you to the
first round. Now, what I will say, Vogel tried to say it would have been had they been healthy. Now, right. You know, that's a big what if.
It's true. I mean, if you'd have told me that Damian Lillard was going to score 250 points in, like, six games or whatever he did.
Then, and have one game that he was 1-for-10.
Right. I would have said, oh, yeah, the Blazers are going to win that series. That's not what happened.
No.
So, who knows? 610-632-0975. Drew, we're going to lead off with you. I want to give you your full time. It's D-Lineham and Joe Torti on The Fanatic.
Weekends on The Fanatic. D-Lineham and Joe Torti. Sports talk never stops. Listen all weekend to 97.5 The Fanatic. Philadelphia.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, D-Line. I'm Joe Torti, 97.5 The Fanatic. Discussing kind of the first round aftermath. The Sixers move on. So many teams do not. And we're waiting to see whether the Clippers will be able to get past the Mavericks as well. Game 7.
Game 7.
Coming up.
Sunday.
We didn't talk about Portland much.
All right, wait a minute. Just with the Clippers?
Yeah.
45 points for Kawhi, shooting 70% from the field. That's what gamers do. That's what superstars do.
And Mavericks, who were defended by Kawhi, scored 11 points in the game.
Yep.
So you're talking about two-way. That's pretty good.
So he may have quirkiness to him, but he certainly has delivered in a number for a number of teams in big moments.
It's the truth.
For sure.
That's why I was surprised. Did you see the stat that ESPN put out before the game talking about Paul George and Kawhi Leonard in, like, game-tying or go-ahead shots in the fourth quarter and overtime? Since Kawhi joined the Clippers, they were, like, 2-for-30 or something like that.
Well, because Paul had a tough go last year.
Yeah, it's true.
That I don't know how much Kawhi contributed to the numbers that they put up, but Paul George's playoffs last year left a little to be desired.
Yeah.
And is probably good for us because Doc Rivers is here because of that.
Because of, exactly right.
So,
thank you,
Paul George.
Yeah, I do want to talk about what went wrong with the Blazers. But first, as we promised, we do have to check in with Drew in Westchester this morning. What's going on, Drew?
Hey, Joe. Hey, D. Good morning. How you guys doing?
Awesome. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm more of a hockey guy, so I kind of haven't really been focusing too much on the NBA, the Sixers, and the playoffs. And I kind of, knew they would, take care of business with the Wizards, so I wasn't too worried that, but now that my team's out of it in hockey and I kind of have a good idea who I think is going to win now, I'm more focused on the Sixers. So here's my question for you guys. With Embiid now being out, is that really like a deal breaker for us moving forward in this series versus Atlanta? Again, I'm a casual fan, so I'm not sure, what Atlanta has, other, I know they got Trae Young and such. So I wasn't sure, how much, we should be really worried without Embiid playing.
Well, Drew, and I don't know how D feels about it. For me, I think that it is possible to survive a series against the Atlanta Hawks without Joel Embiid. It certainly wouldn't look as easy as it did. Against the Wizards. I think in order to do anything of substance after this round, you have to have Embiid there or else you're going to be in trouble. Do you think they can make it, through a 7-game series with the Hawks without Embiid?
I think it would be 50-50. I don't think that I wouldn't put my money on them to win that series without Embiid. But we're saying Embiid out, and I'm not also willing to say that either.
Right.
I think Embiid plays in this series, and I think you need him to play in this. You become a good team without him, and I just don't think that you have enough time to, because you have to change some of the things that you do
if he's not there.
And so what looked really good in game five, I'm not sold that a team that, again, everybody looks and says Trae Young scores, you know, 29 points a game on average, certainly in the playoffs, and he's a scorer. But I think what you really need to focus on is that this team will give you more defensively than you even sniffed against the Washington Wizards. The Sixers were able to score 125 points a game. I'm just telling you, Atlanta is not going to allow you to do that.
Sure. And with that being said, so, you know, hopefully he does play and such. You know, other than the main two, you know, Harris and Simmons stepping up, who do you really see needing to raise their level of play in this series, you know, just in case Embiid is absent for a stretch?
Well, I'm not going to say he has to give you 30, but if he wants to keep playing Call of Duty against Ben and Ben says, give me 30, the shooting of Seth Curry becomes a big, big deal. He and Danny Green... they can't have average games. They have to be above average, in my opinion.
Okay, yeah, see, I haven't really, you know, paid attention, so you're saying stuff. Okay, cool.
Drew, before we let you go, have you come around on whoever wins the Vegas and Colorado series is winning the cup? Like we talked about?
I'm pretty sure of it, but I think Boston may give him a little trouble, depending, but I think so, Joe.
See, Drew, we talked about this weeks ago, man. This is foregone. Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate it. I think you're right. I mean, when you look at what Seth Curry brought to the table, I don't know if that's something that before the season that you could say that we counted on, but you had to have a possibility that you could have a Seth Curry eruption game every once in a while. You know what I mean?
I guess. I'm just saying what you did count on is the guy's over 40% from three for his career.
Yes.
And that's... he and Danny Green both need to deliver in that sense. Now, how many shots that equals remains to be seen. How many possessions are we talking? Is this series going to be a slower pace? I would say yes, than what you saw in the Washington. Washington believed that if their two guys could score at volume, they had their best chance of trying to eliminate the Sixers if they ever felt that they could.
Right.
And I don't believe that Atlanta will do that. So, you know, again, I just go back to holding New York to 97 points on average and under 40% field goal shooting. The Sixers are coming off a series where they averaged 124 points and shot 51% from the floor. Something's going to give in those two numbers.
Right.
Well, there are four numbers I gave, but two sides.
Yes.
And I would say it's going to be somewhere in the middle of them.
Well, so, and the question becomes with Simmons maybe being asked to fill in at the five, at least for game one, your rotation mixed up. The question becomes, you know, Trae Young's one of those scoring guards that the Sixers... the Sixers have had trouble with. What's the plan for him? Doc Rivers said this with John Kincaid on Thursday.
Honestly, with this team, they have a lot of scores. With Washington, you have to worry about the Westbrook fast break and Bradley Beal. This team, you know, Gallinari, Lou Williams, they just have a plethora of guys that can make shots. I don't think it's one of those teams where you can just say, let everybody beat you. They can. So one of the things I will say that I thought we did against Washington is Bradley Beal scored, but he didn't score his points. He scored the way we needed him to. Took the three ball basically out of his game. We made him score contested twos. He's just so darn talented that he did it, but we could live with it. We're going to have to do something similar to Trae.
So I actually appreciate that. So something similar to that with Trae. I'm just going to give people... Trae Young shot 14 of 41 from three in that series against the Knicks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not overwhelming. So I'm not exactly sure when he says we made Bradley Beal take the kind of shots we wanted him to. So is that what he's trying to say? He wants what shots is he wanting Trey to take? I don't know yet.
Right.
I'm maybe as I watch the series unfold, I'll be able to figure it out. He did shoot 34 of 37 at the foul line. He does get to the foul line.
Yep.
And he's going to make his shots there. So my guess is that would be part of what Doc would want, keep him off the foul line. So challenge him, but not in a way that you're giving him extra points by putting him on the line.
And I think that Doc is right, too, in pointing out the supporting cast. And it's kind of a testament to the way that the Hawks are built. You have guys who are efficient. You know that Trae Young's a volume guy. You know, not always going to be hitting 45% from the field. So if you're going to have a strong supporting cast in terms of scoring the ball, they've got to be able to do a lot with a limited number of opportunities. And that's been the way that the team's been built. They have done that so far this year. And you talked about the defense. They've been a team that pace-wise, defensively, points per possession for the other team, they've been pretty good in terms of the metric.
Well, they have once Nate McMillan took over.
Right.
For Lloyd Pierce, who was obviously former Sixers assistant. And, you know, that's one of the things they needed to get better. A year ago, they were a team, you know, and maybe Trey would admit this. You know, I think there's two things I see, that defensively they have gotten better, and Trae Young trusts his teammates more than he did a year ago, which is why, you know, in game two of the first round against the Knicks, he had 14 assists to go with 27 points, because he trusts the guys around him. And Doc just rattled off, you know, whether it's Gallinari or Lou Williams or Hunter, you know, they have solid players around Trae Young. You know, is he the head of the snake? Of course he is. And can you stop him? We're going to find out.
610-632-0975. This weekend's programming is brought to you by Citadel Credit Union. Citadel Credit Union is committed to building strength together to build a better future for us all. Join them at CitadelCU.com. What do you anticipate the game plan is in terms of like an assignment for Trae Young? Who do you think draws that? In game one.
I mean, I think you've learned this with Doc. He doesn't make a steady diet. He puts different people on a particular player repeatedly, you know,
sure,
throughout
the course of a game. Yep.
So if you're telling me that Embiid doesn't play, so Ben starts as the five, I would anticipate if you do it that way that you decide to either put Matisse or Danny Green. I'm going Matisse because I think he's a little quicker right now, and Trey's quick. I think you're going to see Maxey on him for sure at some point because he's chaotic. His defense has improved. Doc will talk about how his defense has improved, and that is the number one reason that Maxey is getting more minutes than Shake Milton is because his defense has improved. So I think you would see that. I think you do put Danny on him at some point because you trust him. And then you're going to learn, is he not quick enough anymore as, you know, 33-year-old Danny?
Sure.
To stay with Trey. And obviously you can put Ben on him.
Does he get a bigger bite of that apple, Ben, if Embiid does return? Like when Embiid's back
in
the
rotation? I would venture to say if Embiid's in your starting lineup, then yes, I would start Ben on Trey.
It seems like that would be the plan.
I think the problem if you're sliding him to the five, that, and believe it or not, it is difficult for some people, but if you're at the five and you're asking him to go guard Trey, that transition of finding your guy because
right.
he's not on you.
Right, exactly.
Becomes a little more difficult, and so I would say if Embiid's out there, absolutely, Ben, to me, I would start him on.
610-632-0975 is your phone number to hop aboard the conversation as we're previewing game one tomorrow.
Yeah, how about another early one on a Sunday?
Yeah. Good news is, you know, right after the shift, you get to go and like lock in and do your pregame routines and get to where you need to be. But yeah, I'm not a big fan of the day game. Yeah, I'd always rather, especially in the postseason, I'd rather wait till the evening. You know, somehow, I don't know if it's the anticipation or the environment.
And I don't know. I mean, obviously, kicking off the day to obviously to TV people maybe is as important as I say playing, you know, the headliner at night.
Right.
And, you know, West Coast plays a factor in it as well.
Sure.
But, yeah, I always go back to Iverson was never a fan of that first game out of the gate. And maybe as a result, I wasn't a fan either.
You absorbed it.
I absorbed it.
Yeah, exactly. But, yes, that's going to be an interesting series. And it's to me, I don't know if you looked at this or not, Dee. Some places I was trying to find odds on the series. And some places are waiting. Like some places took it off the board because of Embiid.
Embiid is a big factor.
Yeah.
Now you do have to submit to the NBA his status.
Yeah.
Sometime today. I think the first report is at 1:30 and the second one is at 5:30, something like that. I mean, I anticipate it's going to say questionable.
Right, yeah.
It's not going to say for sure he's in.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And I don't think they'll rule him out. I mean, they could. I don't know. But I do know that Sunday, Tuesday, Friday is your first three games. The Tuesday and then not till Friday is a big deal.
Yeah, sitting around for a while. Talking about swelling. Talk about things to do.
Or treatment.
Or treatment. Yeah, right, one depending way or the on other. How you handle it. Exactly.
To me, I was looking at it as a bonus.
I think it could be a good thing.
Yeah, I don't. I think that's time to rest up, heal, whatever. And when I say heal, you know, again, you can play with this forever.
Right. Some people do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, every time you go in and scope, the reason I didn't do it is because they say that you have a greater chance of having arthritis kind of things
if you go in and take
and so I was willing to take the chance of do the rehab,
right? Yeah.
And you do, because it stays in there and it flaps.
Okay.
That's the only thing, and that's if it gets caught is when you feel pain.
Right. Okay. I gotcha.
Yeah.
And so my question now for Embiid is, and obviously I'm not saying that Embiid's looking at a knee replacement or anything like that. I'm not what I'm saying at all.
Will he get it scoped after the season?
Exactly. Yeah. Will he get it checked out after?
I would venture to say, yeah.
That's my guess, too, is probably.
Unless, you know, you play and it doesn't really bother you, and then you say, is it really worth it?
Right, exactly.
If I don't have to, and it's not bothering me. But if there's any kind of lingering pain or swelling that he has to deal with, which he can possibly deal with, well, he's going to have to, because he's not going to do any surgery
now
till the end of whatever.
Right.
But if he has anything that he feels like prevents him from being 100%, then my guess is you would go in and take care of it after the fact.
I would think so, too. Let's go to Wes on the cell next on the Fanatic. Good morning, Wes.
Good morning. I had no idea you guys worked this early on Saturdays. I guess I've been watching English soccer for so many weeks. I was clueless. But what a joy. I'm making my Saturday morning drive up to North Jersey, getting my coffee in Flemington. And here's Dee and Joe breaking down defensive matchups. I appreciate that. So that made me think, okay, well, how do we best attack Atlanta with and without Joel? Because, you know, even if Joel plays, I expect maybe his minutes to be a little less.
Sure.
So fire away, Dee, and it's great to hear you. And I also wanted to know, Dee, have you ever been out and played the Olympic Club? I'm amazed at how difficult that course looks for these ladies.
Oh, my gosh.
Also amazed how great they are dealing with that rough.
Unbelievable. No, I have not played it, though I played with a gentleman last weekend who is a member there. And he said, you got to come out. And I said, don't say that if you don't mean it, because I'm coming. Now I'm going in August.
Nice. Very good.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So, but I do love watching them play. And you're right. Man, how about some of the shots these people make? God.
Out of like valleys. The thing that I noticed was like the elevation. They're not like little gullies. You're hitting out of like valleys at that course.
It's, yeah. So, well, you know, I love golf, so it's a joy to watch just such talent for me.
I love watching the best women in the world, amateurs and pros,
both,
going
right?
at it.
I know.
I love watching them play on courses that demand the the best from them.
Yeah, exactly. And it was interesting because, you know, obviously that being on the West Coast, because then the memorial was happening, and I used to live in Ohio, and that was always a big deal when the tournament was at Muirfield. So, you know, you're flipping. I like that I can watch the other later because of the West Coast time.
Sure,
and not miss watching the memorial. And yesterday they had, Jack was in the booth for a long time because that's his course. And to listen to him talk about, like, well, this is why this is so difficult, or this is how it was constructed. You know, it was really cool.
It's great with Jack. Yeah. Thanks. So how are we going to attack the Hawks? I think it's going to be a tough series with or without Joel, but go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, as I said, I think you're, and even Doc kind of admitted it, in that, you know, you were dealing with Westbrook and Beal, not to take anything away from what Scotty Brooks got out of the rest of that squad. But that was your, you know, it was a two-headed monster, if you will. And with the Hawks, you know, whether we can start, obviously, Trey's the first name that comes out of everybody's mouth, but Bogdanovich is a pretty good player. And they have, after Trey, who gave them 29 on average for the five games against the Knicks, now you have four guys who still average double figures, and you have another three guys who give you 9. So they're more balanced. They have guys that can score. That's why Doc threw out the Lou Williams, the Gallinari. You know, they don't go to their bench and have this complete, it's a, you know, they tail off.
Right.
It's not exactly that. They do have guys who can score. You know, they only averaged 104 a game in the playoffs, which was, you know, near the bottom. It was fourth from the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
But as I mentioned, what they held New York to was the lowest in the postseason at 97 points. So they seem to me, just in watching the postseason, they're trying to limit your possessions, and I don't see them not wanting to do that with the Sixers. They do not want Ben out trying to run some fast breaks and get buckets in transition. Ben downhill is a problem for them. So I would anticipate that they're going to try to make it a walk the ball up kind of series.
And that was something that worked out well against the Knicks, because that was kind of the game plan against the Knicks as well. The Knicks aren't the Sixers in transit.
And they took Julius Randle completely. He looked so frustrated.
Right.
They locked in and got him, you know, frustrated. He couldn't make shots. They made it difficult for him. Now, will they try to, in terms of the Sixers, let's just say Joel is out.
Right.
Will they target a Tobias in the same way?
The same thing.
And
yeah,
try to, but I don't think you can frustrate Tobias in the way that I saw Julius Randle be frustrated.
Sure.
Now, we've seen Tobias in years past has struggled in the postseason at times. And that is not the case against Washington. If anything, he came and delivered. He had 37 in that first game, you remember. He had 28 in the game five. He was solid.
Mm-hmm.
He had one bad game. That was game four. But who played well in game four? Nobody.
Right. Exactly.
I think they were all lost when Joe went out. So I would be surprised if they had the same kind of success against Tobias that they had against Julius Randle.
610-632-0975. It's D. Lineham and Joe Torti. Another hour on tap right here on the Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.